Hey guys, Bill here. We're about to release this NFC West podcast with Mina Kimes. We recorded this last week before the second Seahawks preseason game in which George Fant tore his ACL. So obviously that's going to take a Seahawks offensive line that's not exactly the best of offensive lines on a good day and create some issues. It looks like Reese Odhiambo is going to move to left tackle instead of Luke Jokel, who the Seahawks paid to play off tackle heading into this offseason. So a bit of a mess there. Drops down their projection a tiny bit, but I don't think that it really changes things in the NFC West. I think we both still see them as the favorites, even though the offensive line is going to be perhaps more of a problem than the Seahawks may have hoped for. So that's pretty much it. Everything else should pretty much still be up to par, and we will have more podcasts coming later this week, but check out the NFC West podcast today. Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. Sorry, I discovered a spider web right as I was doing the intro for the show and had to get rid of it.
Terrible.
Well, speaking of star of the show, frequent contributor is back, Mina Kimes.
There's no need to, like, what does that have to do with the spider web?
Yeah, there's not really a transition there. I would say that's more of a just a failed spiderweb intro that I feel like we should just move on from before. Because I'm like, where am I going
to
take
Speaking
that?
Of someone who likes to weave a web of takes, here is Mina Kimes.
This is why we have a television professional on the show here.
Daniel Dopp, is that who you're talking about?
Wow. Who are you talking about?
Breakout. Who? TV star, Daniel Dopp?
I'm not familiar with him.
That's harsh. My boss.
I hope he doesn't listen.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is.
He's all of our bosses now.
True.
It's true. So, Mina, thanks for coming on. We're going to talk today about the NFC West, your beloved Seattle Seahawks. But they're at the end of the show. We have a lot to get to before them.
It's good.
A team that I think it sounds like neither of us have any handle on how they're going to be this year, the Arizona Cardinals. Let's start there.
Who I think I predicted would win the Super Bowl last season. Maybe on this. Is that right? I get reminded by that a lot of Seahawks to it. I think I said I wanted it to be a reverse jinx. So it worked.
You covered all the bases there.
You're basically right. Yeah.
They did not win the Super Bowl last year.
No. What did they finish? 7-8-1, right? Or no?
They were 7-8-1.
7-8-1. So I think they're really complicated, and I'm sure for reasons that you agree with, which is they were a better team than they were last season, right? So they had I think they should have finished with 9.4 wins. I'm looking right now.
Mm-hmm.
But so all signs point towards, okay, well, this team should be better than they were, and they were, you know, underrated in some ways, but then they lost half of their defense. So taking those two things into account, it's kind of hard to figure out where to land in the middle.
Yeah. Given the choice between keeping Chandler Jones and everyone else, they chose Chandler Jones, which is not the worst idea, but they're down, what, 5 starters on defense? Calais Campbell, Kevin Minter, Marcus Cooper, DJ Swearinger, Tony Jefferson. Yeah, 5 starters on defense, plus Alex Okafor, who was a starter a couple of years ago, Darrell Washington, who came back from being suspended for half a decade and has disappeared again. It's a problem on defense. A team that really, it seemed like they were built to win the Super Bowl last year, coincidentally. And it didn't work out. And so now you're kind of, they're retooling on the fly. And some of the guys are familiar. They brought back Carlos Dansby for like his 17th stint with the team. They have guys like, you know, you're hoping that Tyrann Mathieu is going to be better this year after coming back from a torn ACL again last year. Players like Robert Nkemdiche, who has not been off to a great start this camp, is someone who's expecting to fill in for Calais Campbell. I mean, they knew this was going to happen. It's just a question of, did the moves they make actually work out? And that's kind of up in the air. I mean, I have to admit that I'm pretty skeptical about this defense, even though they were good last year. They weren't the problem with this team last year by any means.
I like Antoine Bethea, who I saw him at, not a camp, where was it? It was in Norfolk. While I was doing the camp chancellor thing. I guess he's from there. And he is a small man. He's really short, which often happens with safeties, I find. That I'm like, oh, you're like not the biggest. And this except is the guy who's going to stand next to Tyrant, except for Cam.
Yeah, except for Cam, who was a monster.
He's literally the biggest human. And I was reading about, I think yesterday, Tyrann Mathieu and how he last season never felt super comfortable at free safety. But that's obviously the role they're going to put him in this season. I'm not quite sure how they plan on working in Buda Baker and how much yet, who is obviously a player I love from UW, but he is a rookie. And there's just so many question marks. I think, like, I hear people talking about this linebacker group as though Hassan Reddick is just going to slide right in and be a superstar, and I don't know how, you know, how we can take that for granted. I think, obviously, the loss of Campbell is the biggest of all mm-hmm. the players you mentioned. I think a lot of them, the other ones are meaningful, certainly. Jefferson, yeah. Minter was he was there all the time. So
yeah.
I just don't know. I just think there are so many question marks right now. But yeah, Campbell, that's just huge. And not just because of the numbers and the production he did put up, but mm-hmm. that guy got double teamed every game. Like yeah. just not having to account for him is going to be enormously impactful, I think, for this defense.
Yeah, no, it's not that they don't have options. Like there's a scenario where Hassan Reddick is a very good player from day one, where Buda Baker does have an impact at safety, where Tyrann Mathieu can play free safety and then also play some slot corner and be good, where somebody steps up across from Patrick Peterson at cornerback, and I think that's still going to be the biggest problem with this defense, where Robert Akinduche plays, you know, reasonably well in the stead of Calais Campbell at defensive end. Like, there are options there. Like, it could be worse. It's like they have no talent there, but you're asking a lot out of guys, and you're asking a lot out of young players, and if you look at this, the track record of this team, you know, most of the guys they draft tend to get in the doghouse for the first year or two. There are exceptions, of course. Demi Cannon stepped in from day one. Mathieu was great he was pretty good his first year and then great after coming back from that first turn ACL. But, you know, their first-round picks, guys like DJ Humphreys and Kandice last year, I mean, they really, and Jonathan Cooper a couple years earlier, if they stay healthy, they really tend to get in the doghouse. And Bruce Arians has no qualms about just insulting large swaths of his football team at any given point.
Yeah, it's funny because I think we were talking a little bit about, I asked you what you meant by the breakout mm-hmm. player, you know, how you define that. And I don't want to spoil yours, but you went with one of the players who's in the doghouse and I went with the other one, I think. Mine's Incom DJ. So,
yeah.
We're seeing now, it is funny how these Bruce Arians players go through these phases. Now we're getting mm-hmm. they like him. He's looking disruptive. He's learning. He's changed a lot. Those stories are starting to come out about mm-hmm. him. And a lot of that is because they just need him now to yeah. be that guy. Do you want to talk about your guy?
My guy is DJ Humphreys, who yeah. was didn't play at all his first year, was kind of getting shots at right tackle last year, and then he moved to left tackle at the end of the year. And they're like, oh, well, he's actually good now, so we can use him at left tackle, which... I don't know. I mean, maybe it could work out that way, but it just seems like this is a motivational or rhetorical tactic that can only really work so many times. And when it doesn't work, I feel like it's going to work. It's going to happen really poorly. The entire team is going to turn on Bruce Arians at some point, it feels like.
I do have some concerns about that line, by the way, just going off of Humphreys. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't good last year.
It was not good last year. I thought, especially in pass protection, you know, Ayupati in particular jumped out as looking like he was getting old and mm-hmm. taking a step back. And Carson Palmer, his sack rate rose to 6.3%.
Yeah.
And he is just much, much worse under pressure as a quarterback. So if that doesn't improve, that could be a huge problem for him.
Yeah. And I think the thing with Palmer is that, like, you know, last year we were operating from the perception that, oh, in 2014, he'd been good before he got hurt. And then 2015, he had a career yeah. year. He was phenomenal in 2015. And last year, he was kind of the guy he'd been over most of his career. Like, the interception rate went up, the sack rate went up. He wasn't as effective throwing downfield. He lost 1.6 yards per throw off of his yards per attempt. It was right back where he'd been over his previous three seasons on average, pretty much. So, you know, as you sort of get removed from that year where he was 36, or he had that career year at 36, you kind of can't expect him to be that guy. It's more plausible that he's the guy from 2016 who's fine, but who's not, like, a guy who you're going to be terrified by every time he steps on the field. So I wonder how much of this team, how much of this offense comes down to David Johnson just being a one-man wrecking crew again.
Oh, he's going to get 350 carries. I mean, I don't know how I feel about that in general. I mean, it's just kind of hard to watch mm-hmm. in a way. I mean, they're going to work him into the ground, right? It's already begun. He is such a phenomenal talent. I did a column a few months ago about running backs mm-hmm. Who aren't drafted in the first round and just how they can, what a terrible position that is economically for them to watch it happen. And I feel like that's just what we're seeing with David Johnson. He just is the offense now at this point. And he's just so good. But
if he gets hurt, this offense is scary bad almost immediately.
Interesting. You don't think Larry? I mean, well, so we've got Larry, John Brown, Floyd's gone, J.J. Nelson, and then I think Jaron Brown will be back, and he's flashed at times, probably as the number three. How do you view that receiving core?
I think it's fine. I mean, I don't think it's like it's going to be a bunch of world beaters. I think Larry Fitzgerald is good, but I mean, he's a good slot receiver at this point of his career, which is helpful, but it's not going to, you know, build your entire offense when you want to throw the ball downfield. John Brown is someone who was absolutely terrifying in 2015, and then 2016 had a cyst on his spine, was suffering with the effects of sickle cell, and then was supposed to be healthy this year, and then all, you know, of training camp, he's been hurt repeatedly, and there's concerns that basically it's going to keep affecting him. So it's tough for me to kind of figure out if he's going to be, you know, a really impactful player in 2017. They drafted Chad Williams in the third round, who I guess could play a meaningful role from day one, but again, you know, Bruce Arians is out there talking about how they have two useful wide receivers in the NFL, you know, on their team. So that's a little disconcerting.
Yeah, I didn't know he said he's...
Yes. Well, I don't know. I mean,
what
I think...
What a weird character.
It's really strange. I mean, you know, they've made it work in years past. They've had been able to run an offense with Chris Johnson out there and have him be effective. But I don't know. I mean, this offensive line just isn't that exciting. They have... The interior is a problem, I think, with A.Q. Shipley and Evan Boehm at center and right guard. I'm not thrilled about that combination there. The tackles are a question mark. I don't know. I mean, it could work out well, you know, if Johnson stays healthy.
No, which... I think we've really convinced each other to turn against the Cardinals over the course of this conversation. You can hear the tones of our voices being like, well, they were a lot better last year than their record says, and then gradually dropping in tone and getting more and more negative.
Right, which is why I don't know what to say about this team. I'm so torn in different ways about this team. And I mean, there's
as a Seattle fan, I want to say I am so – I was – really surprised they didn't draft a quarterback, right? And am very relieved they didn't take Mahomes, which I know that Bruce Arians wanted him. But he looks like, I mean, who knows if he's going to be good. Early signs are nice, but why didn't this team take a quarterback, man? Yeah. Carson Palmer's 37 years old.
They wanted to. I mean, they apparently wanted to take a bunch of quarterbacks, and each time someone kind of traded up before them and took a guy. So my pet theory, I think I mentioned this to you, but I did tweet it, was that Blake Bortles is going to start at least one game for the Arizona Cardinals in 2018, which I still believe. So I don't know. I mean,
God willing.
Yeah, they're a weird team, and it's so easy to imagine a scenario where they're really good. Like if the defense stays healthy, if the stars play like stars, if Chandler Jones and Patrick Peterson, who we barely talked about, play like superstars, you know, the defense could be good. The offense could be totally fine, maybe even good. You know, David Johnson could be an MVP candidate again if he stays healthy. He should have been, honestly, last year, given how effective he was and what a meaningful role he played, leading the league in yards from scrimmage and touchdowns last year for offensive players. I mean, it's not crazy to think they could be really good, but there's just a ton of question marks. And I really think DJ Humphries is going to play a big role, because if they can protect Palmer, I think the offense is going to be okay. I think they'll be able to make enough big plays, and they'll have enough from David Johnson to get going on offense. But if he's under siege, I mean, he's going to get killed. And if he gets hit a bunch, he's a 38-year-old quarterback with a 37-year-old quarterback with multiple torn ACLs in his past. And I think we're done with the Drew Stanton thing, where we were like, maybe Drew Stanton's actually pretty good. Like, we think we learned our lesson. He's not actually that good. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to make of this team.
Yeah, the stat I wanted to pull up on Carson was last season, his DVOA under pressure dropped from second to 23rd in the league. So. Right. So the offensive line is just so huge to this team and this offense. And if it's not successful, I just don't see the offense being successful, no matter how many times they dump it off to DJ. the record. So I've been looking at their schedule. I mean, the whole division is so bad that you buy the, you know, I mean, I have a question for you, actually. I wanted to ask you this. Which division is better, the NFC West or the AFC East? Very similar divisions, I think.
Yeah. I feel like the AFC is a little more polarized, maybe, in that, you know, I think the Patriots are going to be better than the Seahawks, which, sorry, Seahawks Twitter, but it's
fair.
Yeah, I also think that I think the Rams and Niners might be better than the Jets and Bills.
You think so?
Maybe, but I think the Cardinals are going to be better than the Dolphins, so I don't know. I would probably go... Are we talking like just cumulative win total or DVOA or what?
DVOA.
DVOA. Mm. The Seahawks are the DVOA champs, though.
I see them as real similar.
It's probably within the margin of error either way. Like, I don't have a strong opinion one way or another about them.
Just structurally. But anyways, for the reason that the division is so bad, I actually think the Cardinals could pull out a winning record.
Yeah, and I mean, their schedule's not especially tough. They're 31st.
No.
31st, like, yeah, the schedule according to the Football Power Index. They get the NFC East and the AFC South this year, the entire division. They get four games against the Rams and the Niners, who aren't going to be especially good, and then they get the Bucks and the Lions as part of their two, you know, out-of-schedule, out-of-division games. So that could be... It's a pretty comfortable schedule. I mean, I...
Yeah.
Now I'm talking myself back into it, though. This is so frustrating.
Well, I think I'm talking myself into a winning schedule. I don't think they're a great team, but I've got them at 9-7.
Yeah, me too. That's where I have them. I think that's... is that like... But, like, honestly, if they were 11-5, I'd be like, oh, yeah, of course. And if they were 6-10, I'd be like, yeah, well, duh. I mean, what did you expect to happen? So I honestly have no idea.
The range is there.
Yeah, they have really high variance, I think, for this team, more than maybe anyone else in football. Do you think...
Interesting.
Do you think that... Let me ask you this. Do you think that Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald are suiting up for the Cardinals week one of 2018?
I think Carson Palmer is, and Larry Fitzgerald is not.
Really? Do you think Larry Fitzgerald retires, or he goes to play somewhere else?
Yeah, I think he'll retire after this season.
Would it hurt you if he played for the Patriots in 2018?
I forgot that possibility. Well, the reason I say there were retirement rumors last season,
yeah,
and I just remember with Steve Smith how that kind of played out. I mean, it just feels like too many seasons where there's been retirement rumors, and... Mm-hmm. He's a guy who also, you know, he's clearly going to go into broadcasting or, you know, work as an analyst. So it just, I feel like the playbook is kind of there for him, mm-hmm. you know, with a lot of times with guys retiring, it's, I think sometimes they put it off because they don't know what they're going to do maybe afterwards, or mm-hmm. it's not as clear. It seems pretty obvious with Larry, and it also seems obvious that he's on a team that's not going to get better, you know? I mean, the yeah. Cardinals... Man, I don't know what they're going to look like in 2020, you know, yeah. with this roster.
It's really weird. And they haven't drafted super well is the problem. Like, I think they've done a lot of things really yeah. well. They've done a great job of getting, you know, a ton out of guys like Dwight Freeney and John Abraham and Chris Johnson, guys who you wouldn't expect to get much out of, and they've been fine. But their drafts have been so inconsistent. Like, for every Tyrann Mathieu, they have a Jonathan Cooper, where it's like, if you could just yeah. get both of us, they get David Johnson, but they also draft... you know, Robert Nkundice, who looks like they're getting nothing out of so far. So they're just so inconsistent when it comes to the draft that it's, you know, who knows what their roster is going to look like. Makes you think.
The Arizona Cardinals makes you think.
Yes. A team that maybe isn't fun to think about quite as much. The Los Angeles Rams, who are all in for 6 wins in 2017.
All in. That's the Seahawks motto, all in.
Is it?
When you go to their website, it flashes like a giant all in page. And then, yeah, it's very disconcerting.
How often do you go to the Seahawks webpage?
I was just there because I was, okay, so I last season I was wearing an Earl Thomas jersey on the day he got hurt. So I was like, I can't wear that again. It's poison now. So it's the whole thing. And deciding whether or not to get a new jersey.
Who are you planning on getting?
I don't know. I haven't decided because I don't want to curse anyone again. So it's very fraught.
Is that a play on words there?
I'm not getting a Jermaine Curry. Maybe I will to use my jinxing powers on him.
How dare you?
We'll get to that team. Let's talk about the Rams.
How dare you? Doesn't Jermaine Curry seem like a really likely Ram at some point in the future of his career?
That is so perfect. Who does he remind you of? I mean, it would be unfair to maybe like a Robert Woods. Type.
Yeah, they're both good blockers, so
yeah,
that part checks out.
That's what I was kind of thinking.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Rams are all set at wide receiver with Sammy Watkins, Robert Woods, and the $11 million man, Tavon Austin, who apparently doesn't have much of a spot on the roster at this point. What a weird team. Like, the moves they made this offseason, they bring in the youngest head coach in football, and then Wade Phillips, who's a very old defensive coordinator, who's great. I love Wade Phillips. I think he's going to be very helpful for this team. But, like, I was talking with Paul Kuharski on Thursday about, or Friday about the Titans. And it's like, okay, I their moves might not work, but, like, every move they made makes sense. Like, they filled this hole. They have this long-term plan. This is what they want to do on offense and defense. With the Rams, it's like, yeah, we have a rookie or second-year quarterback, so let's sign Andrew Whitworth and trade for Sammy Watkins. We have no draft picks, but let's not get any comp picks, and let's not, you know, let's trade away our picks from 2018. This makes a ton of sense. We're really smart.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because there's the question, okay, what can they do to help Goff, right? Which should be, I mean, well, that's an interesting question because there's a short-term and a long-term aspect of that, right?
Like, sure.
They want to build for the long-term because Goff's not going to be good this year, the team's not going to be good this year, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But then they want to also put Goff in the best possible position to grow as a player and succeed. So maybe their thinking was with, you know, Whitworth improving the line and then, I guess, Watkins. I'm trying to talk myself into it. The Watkins thing in particular really blew my mind because, I mean, God, I just... It's weird. Jared Goff also was just so bad last season, yeah. Like historically bad.
Yeah, if you run the numbers,
everybody's pretty aware of that by now.
Yeah, if you run the numbers in Pro Football Reference, they have error-adjusted stats, and he had basically one of the five worst seasons in football history. You know, for 200 pass attempts last year, he was brutally bad. And yes, the offensive line was bad; his receivers were not great. But there have been rookies in the past who were that bad. And this was a guy who was supposed to be "quote unquote" pro ready. You know, he was the guy who was supposed to be way ahead of Carson Wentz, and it turns out we know nothing about quarterbacks, so I don't know why we even pretend to use those words at any point. He had an 11.3% sack rate, which is pretty incredibly
wow.
bad. Seven picks and 205 attempts, and like, it wasn't like he was throwing a super, you know, aggressive ball downfield. Like, he was throwing pretty conservative passes, averaged 5.3 yards per attempt, so just downright brutal. So, I mean, you're not going to give up on him, of course. They've changed the coaching staff around, so that's not going to happen. Sean McVay, by all accounts, did a great job with Kirk Cousins in Washington, so there's reason to be hopeful. I just, like, you don't have those problems solved. And yeah, sure, like, you do want to protect him. So from that perspective, yes, Whitworth does make sense. But let's say Sammy Watkins has a good year. What are you going to do? Like, they have no fifth-year option on him, so he would be a free agent after the year. Are you going to franchise him again and play the same franchise game you lost with Trumaine Johnson? And you're going to end up losing him in 2 years. Do you sign him to a mammoth extension, which is what he's going to get in the free market when he has stayed healthy? You know, if he's healthy this year, it'll be like the first time he's been healthy and productive over the course of his career as a full-time starter. I mean, do you want to pay to lock that guy up for 3 years? It seems like they sign themselves up for a problem that is unlikely to work out really well.
It feels like with this offense, they don't know what they're building around. Like, they have these pieces that they can't give up on. Tavon mm-hmm. Austin signed to one of the worst contracts. Gurley, who obviously they can't, you know, give up on him anyways, and they still have to.
Are you done patting yourself on the back for Todd Gurley last year?
I have done no patting myself on the. Oh gosh, I wish we had like a drop of whatever I said. I can't remember the take, but
he averaged 3.2 yards per carry last year, so. Whatever negative thing you said ended up being
it was negative, right? I think I got some hate.
I think the thing was like we both said it, but you really took credit for it.
No.
Yes, I was not.
That's not how it went. I went out on a limb, and you were like, "Yeah, he had some up and down, you know, explosive plays." I was like, "No, he's gonna be trash."
He's trash,
and I was right.
You called him trash, girly. That was the nickname you had for him, I believe.
That's not true. But I did say I thought he was very uneven and
sure.
could have a big downturn. That's what happened. But yeah, but I guess, you know, my point, like, they don't, what is this offense, like, the identity of it? I don't think they know. I don't think they know who they're building around because mm-hmm. they don't know what they have with Goff. Maybe they might not know what they have with Gurley either. They have a bad offensive line. They have Tavon Austin, like I said, worst contract. So it's a disaster. I mean, how do you look at this offense and what do you see that makes you optimistic about the future, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like they have a car that has incredible rims and a really incredible sound system, but like the engine's broken. And like the paint's peeling off and there's a huge dent in the side. Like, it's just, it's this weird mix of super valuable or super things they perceive to be super valuable that maybe are not that valuable and things they paid a ton for that they're just stuck with the sunk cost for the near future.
So the defense,
I was waiting for that.
I just don't know what else to say about the offense. Yeah. I don't see them getting better unless Goff is a completely different person. And mm-hmm. that's possible. I will say, you know, when I was watching him last season, I didn't see him and think, wow, that's a terrible offensive line, no weapon, which were true, right? Mm-hmm. But you saw him making mistakes on his own all the time, like bouncing passes. Like, he looked individually and independently terrible to me.
Yeah, for sure. And he could get better. But
totally could.
Yeah. Defensively, you have more hope. I mean, you'd have to figure that Wade Phillips has been good everywhere he's gone, and there's certainly plenty of talent here. They added Connor Barwin this offseason. They, of course, just traded AJ Gaines, who was starting for them last year in the Sammy Watkins trade, but there's still enough depth in the secondary. Jermaine Johnson's back. Robert Quinn is back. The big question, I guess, is what about Aaron Donald, who is holding out in hopes for a new contract with 2 years left to go on his current deal?
So I obviously saw that news and checked our schedule immediately. Sadly, Seattle is not playing Rams until October. There's no way. I actually don't think he'll hold out. I mean, it's just so rare in the NFL today because of the financial incentives. But, man, well,
it just doesn't make sense. I mean, let's say he does. Like, yeah. I think that's a logical thing to worry about if a guy has 1 year left in his contract. Where if it's like, okay, we think it's a pretty good shot of losing him next year in free agency, then yeah, you're kind of stuck. Aaron Donald is under contract for the next two seasons on his rookie deal, let alone for they could franchise him a third year from now. So I mean, he is so far away from free agency that like, if he's going to play 8 games a year this year, like what's he going to do next year? Is he going to do the same thing next year? Like it just doesn't. It sort of beggars belief, and it's not that he doesn't deserve it.
Well, guys have gotten paid though. It's happened. You and I were talking about it. I think you sent me some examples other first round picks.
Did I get blackout drunk and text you contract negotiations and stuff? I don't think so.
Didn't Lane Johnson? Am I wrong? Lane Johnson?
Yes. Oh, you did talk about this. You're right. Yeah. We did talk about this. Lane Johnson, I think, was the
Gosh, you don't remember our conversations? Our amazing conversations about first round picks getting extended?
That was a while ago. Upsetting. But yeah, so that actually is a really good example of Lane Johnson being someone who did it. But he got it like in January. Like he got it like right as the season ended. He wasn't sort of pressing his luck and holding out to the season. I sympathize with Aaron Donald. He deserves way more money, but like that's the business that we're in, unfortunately. And it's going to be tough for him. I mean, someone like J.J. Watt is probably the closest example to Aaron Donald, and he signed his contract in a similar spot 2 years before free agency, and he got a lot of money. But you look at the actual year-to-year value of it; it's way less than it would have been if he'd waited 2 years and gone to free agency. Like he would have got an incredibly large contract. So, I mean,
interesting.
If he's looking for J.J. Watt money, I suspect he'd get it pretty quickly. I think he'd get it, you know, either this year. He'd probably get it by the end of the offseason. But if he wants Von Miller money, like Von Miller waited until the end of his contract and had been franchised. Like he had a ton of leverage. He was coming off of a Super Bowl victory. Like you have to have everything in your favor to get that kind of contract as a defensive player. And the reality is, as good as Aaron Donald is, it's just he's not in that spot yet.
Yeah. How do you feel about him in the 3-4, which, you know, now that Wade Phillips is there, they're going to slightly transition their defense.
I mean, like, I think at this
point, are you excited to see him in that role?
Excited? Like, I don't think anything gets me excited these days. I think
Aaron Donald switching to it.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if excited is the word I'd use, but like, it'll be interesting. Teams spend so much time these days in their nickel lineman, four down lineman.
Nickel, right.
It's almost really like matter. Like, it does matter, but it doesn't matter as much as it would have 10 or 15 years ago. I think he's going to be good no matter how you use him, unless they use him as, like, a straight-up nose tackle, which I don't think they will. I'm intrigued to see what happens with Robert Quinn, where, you know, he's going to be playing off the line of scrimmage some and dropping back into coverage occasionally. Like, he's not going to do it a ton, but, I mean, he's going to be the Von Miller in this defense. So I wonder if it's going to kind of reignite his career because, you know, we think of Robert Quinn as like this superstar defensive end and superstar pass rusher, and he has the ability for sure. He's scary when he's on, but like he had one year with 19 sacks, and then the other 5 years of his career, he's averaged 7 sacks a year.
Yeah, in the absence of additional pressure from him, it really hurts because the secondary is not great. I mean, Trumaine Johnson, whose franchise is average, I think.
Wow.
I don't know who's playing opposite against him. Let's see.
It's Kayvon Webster. Who barely played over the last few years in Denver, but was someone who had Phillips brought over and who he's one of those guys where, like, I think every team where they get a new coach as a player or two like this, where they're like, he won the job the first week of training camp. He's going to be a superstar. And it's like, maybe. Like, sometimes those guys work out, but usually they're just pretty bad and they just happen to be getting a bigger role because there's someone else there.
He was Von Miller's roommate in Denver. I remember that. That's how I know his name. I was like, how do I know that name? My favorite thing is that Nickel Robey Coleman might be playing the nickel.
Yes.
Amazing. He is. Yeah, He is. That's great. But other than that, there's just a lot of question marks. I don't even know. So they've got LaMarcus Joyner. I don't know who's Mo Alexander. It's kind of hazy back there right now.
Yeah, for sure.
Now that we realize Janoris Jenkins was really, he was a great player this whole time. His absence is certainly felt.
Yeah. So, I mean, the pass rush is going to be the big thing here. Like, if they can get a pass rush going, it'll cover for the secondary. It will create some short fields for that offense. And, I mean, I have faith in Wade Phillips. Like the guy has been good for so long with so many different teams that if anyone's going to get the most out of this team, it's going to be him.
And McVay. I mean, if anyone can take a quarterback and, you know, Jared Goff and design an offense in which he's has the ability to succeed, which is what we saw with Cousins. One would think, you know, he could do it, but the talent in Washington was so different. I mean, this is just, offense.
Do you buy the Gerald Everett hype?
No.
No?
I mean, you know, what have we seen from this team so far in their ability to find those kinds of players? I guess it's possible. Anything is possible.
It just seems like, and this is unfair because it's previous administrations, but they just seem to get the least out of the talent they have in so many different situations where you've guys like Tavon Austin, Gurley, guys who were superstars in college who come in and you're just like, oh, they could do this, and they'd be really cool and they're going to get the most out of them. And then 2 years later, we're just like, oh, get these guys off the field. We're so sick of them. They're so bad. And it's not, I don't blame the players. I blame the organization. They just seem to do such a bad job at this. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, this is obviously a different coaching staff, and that should help. I have a lot of faith in the people they have, but I'm skeptical. Who do you have as your breakout player for the Rams?
Well, this is really difficult because there aren't any young players on the team. Like, I think a lot of so thinking about breakout players and like who could change the fortunes of this team, it is a lot of older players, right? Your Quinns, for example. Is impactful. Gurley in his third year. What are we going to see from him? But I think this team lives and dies by Jared Goff. And he has to really, really look different from last season for them to win more than 4 or 5 games.
That's a real, like...
is that a cop-out?
No, yeah. It's a real, like 10 p.m. local news breakout player pick for the year.
Jared Goff. Yeah, I never want to say this guy's name because I don't know if it's Jamin or Hamon.
Jamin Brown. I have no idea what you're talking about.
They moved their guard to right tackle. You know what I'm talking about.
Hamon. I have no idea.
Is it Hamon?
I have no idea. Why wouldn't it be Hamon? Hamon Brown pronunciation.
But Jamin, I know a bunch of people named Jamin. That's like a common name.
So you're saying Hamon's,
well.
Hamon's a weird name?
Well, there wouldn't you think there would be an accent over the A if it was Hamon?
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. I can't.
Who's
find
your
it.
Breakout player? Is it Hamon?
It's Jamin Brown. No, I'm gonna go with. I'm gonna say Kayvon Webster. If they have two good cornerbacks, then I'm not worried about the safeties as much. I'm not worried about the front seven having an issue. Like, I think if Webster actually is good from day one, then that defense looks entirely different to me. And not only for this year, but for the years to come. Because if you assume they lose Johnson after the season, their cornerback depth chart is scary. It's Roby Coleman. It's Webster. It's Michael Jordan is on this team at cornerback, apparently. That was news to me.
Incredible. Wow.
Yeah. You know what? I mean, he gave baseball a shot, so I don't see why not. I mean, like, their cornerback is a major problem. And, of course, they don't have a second-round pick next year after the Watkins trade. So if Webster steps up, then suddenly they're in a different spot.
Can I just say one more thing about the Watkins trade?
Mm-hmm.
After that happened, I had to remind. I was reminded that Les Snead is still the GM, and I gasped.
Yes, it's really crazy, huh?
It's crazy. I gasped. It's really something.
It's very strange. And some of the moves they made this offseason, I wonder if that was one of the reasons why was to sort of secure his future, where they were paying the moral hazard of, okay, well, look, we did this great job protecting Jared Goff, and we got him a number one receiver for a second-round pick. Like, let's sign me to an extension for 3 years. But it's just hard to see that making a lot of sense.
So where do you have the record?
I think they're going to get better. I think they're going to be 6-10. Which would be a...
Gosh, I had 6-10. We can't have all the same records.
Well, I don't have the Seahawks going 16-0, so I'm not concerned about that. Sorry, 14-2. They're going to lose to the Rams twice. Well, let's do that. We'll,
I've baked one loss in there for the Rams. We'll,
yeah, will the Seahawks lose to the Rams this year?
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's one of their six wins. I've absolutely baked that. I looked at the schedules. I absolutely earmarked a loss to the Rams.
Okay, you're being honest. That is a hallmark tradition of the Seahawks season. Hallmark tradition of our show, of course, is to take a break, but we'll be back with more Bill Barnwell Show here in a second. Welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN, joined by ESPN television presenter Mina Kimes, talking about the NFC West. And let's get to the most exciting team in the division, Kyle Shanahan's San Francisco 49ers and the Kyle Juszczyk experience.
Is that how you say it, Juszczyk?
Yeah. You say it Hamon? I believe is how you pronounce it.
Juszczyk.
Juszczyk.
Wow. Juszczyk is this?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Kyle Juszczyk, has the most outlandish contract in football quantitatively. Yes. He gets 202% of the average top 10 fullback contract. He is making, I think, $6 million this year, $7 million this year. How productive does he have to be to make that contract seem smart, where people are going to be in week 15 being like, wow, I really understand why they gave Kyle Juszczyk that deal?
I'm trying to think of a recent example of a fullback being productive.
It's like Larry Centers, right? You have to go back to.
Yeah.
Mike Alstott,
I will say,
basically,
the fact that they signed him makes sense to me in some ways. Given, oh, there goes Lenny. Sorry. Oh, he doesn't agree.
Yeah,
Lenny does not agree.
Lenny, I think, also thinks it's pronounced Hamun as opposed to Hamon.
Okay, wow. This is going on for a while. So, this is a really bad offensive line.
Yeah.
Like, I just looked at it, pulled it. Because, well, I thought Zuda was still on the team. But then I saw someone else had just signed him.
Yeah, the Ravens signed him back.
Yes. So I guess that'll be Kilgore at center, and he's not terrible, but goodness, the rest of this line is bad. You know, Staley just really has gotten old. If this doesn't sound organic, it's because Lenny barked so loudly we had to pause production. But just FYI, I can't remember. But I was talking about the Niners' offensive line, which is just real, real bad.
Yeah.
So right now it looks like Staley, Beatles, I guess Kilgore at center, Garnett, and then Trent Brown, who I think Von Miller just said has the potential to be the best player in the NFL. But yeah. Setting that aside, that's not a good offensive line.
You're forgetting Gary Gilliam is backing up this line, ready to come in at a moment's notice.
I am not forgetting Gary Gilliam. it's just a real problem. And so they seem to still be committed to Carlos Hyde. And so I see what they're trying to do, you know, in signing Juszczyk, right?
Juszczyk.
Are you getting that? Juszczyk. So it was absolutely not worth what they paid him, but I understand the logic behind the signing.
I don't. So I makes sense. It's like, I just can't imagine that they were competing with someone who was willing to offer Juszczyk 80% of what they paid him. It felt like they were negotiating with themselves on the Juszczyk signing, which maybe they were. Maybe he wasn't willing to go anywhere like this unless it was going to be for this much money. But I just can't imagine that the market for him was such that they had to basically more than double any other fullback's contract to pay him. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, if he gets 100 passes and he's, you know, a super productive player and gets a ton of first downs for them, great. But he wasn't good in Baltimore. Like, he had that one touchdown last year that everyone remembers, but like, he was a dump off target on third down. So he didn't have a positive receiving DVOA, and he wasn't lead blocking on a great offense. It wasn't like he was Jerome Felton, where like every year his running back happened to get 200 yards. Like, the Baltimore running game has been terrible the past few years. So I don't see it. I don't know. Well, maybe he'll be a totally different player, but they were paying for the guy who I think they think they're going to get versus the guy who Juszczyk has actually been, or who he projects to be going forward. Not the other moves they made, I'm skeptical of. Like, they signed a new receiving core, basically. They brought in Pierre Garçon, which is like, okay, it kind of makes some sense, but like, Marquise Goodwin, like, you couldn't have found a fast guy. Like, I don't understand why the NFC West went after like the Bills receivers and were like, yep, this is what we need to get going. Like, this has been the problem all along, has been haven't had enough Buffalo wideouts to make this offense go.
Yeah. I think, well, it's interesting to talk about this offense right after we talked about the Rams, right? Because it's almost easier for me to understand the Niners offense, because you know, with the Rams, I was saying, it feels like they don't know what they have. They don't know what they're building around, but they seem to be trying, like they're trying to build around Goff and Gurley, but maybe that's a bad strategy. The Niners, they're not trying to build around anything. They're just trying to have a semi-competent NFL offense. They're building on the defense, and then they're going to get their quarterback next year, right? So strategically, in some ways, it's like a little bit more cogent to me. They're not going to be good. Like, there's nothing, you don't look at this offense, there's nothing that jumps out at you that thinks they're going to break into the top 20, you know. They have a couple of competent NFL players now in Garcon, Hyde, I guess, potentially could still be okay. Mm-hmm. Hoyer's not the worst quarterback in the NFL.
No, not at all.
So, yeah, it's just they're going to be like the 25th best offense.
Would you, if you were a San Francisco, I guess Santa Clara, if you were a dude... Right, dude, I just a person. You could be a lady doing this. A person selling, like, knockoff jerseys outside the stadium. Would you start selling a Kirk Cousins Niners jersey this year?
Ooh. That's interesting.
Like, let's say you had to pay to get 100 of them made.
Yes.
Would you make that 100 and hope that you could sell them all during the season?
I think it is more likely than... So they're the leader in the clubhouse for the Kirk Cousins carousel next year, which is going to be amazing.
It's going to be great content.
I got it. Yes. It's going to be great content. It's not a carousel. Carousel is when you go from place to place. What is...
Are you just going to do the Mad Men speech now?
No, I'm just... I'm thinking, like, what is the proper metaphor for what's happening with Kirk Cousins next season?
I have no idea. I think Kirk Cousins is his own metaphor.
Definitely not auction.
No.
Stay away. So...
Yeah, I
yeah, it's going to be insane.
It'll be entertaining, and it'll be... I think it's going to be a thing where even during this season, like, we're going to be paying attention to it. Like, if he has a good week, I think it's just going to make Niners fans even that much more happy. Like, if you're a Niners fan, do you want Kirk Cousins to have a great year or kind of a bad year?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think you want him to be exactly... No, you want him to be average, but have people blame everything around him.
It's like Tyrod Taylor.
No, so it'd be like, look, yes, exactly. Who also, by the way, could easily be on the Niners next. I don't think he will with Shanahan, but that's next season's going to be a wild quarterback market.
It really is.
And that's going to be a lot of fun. But yeah, I mean, he is going to be on this team. Let's talk about the defense. This offense is so boring. I really don't like know what to say about it. The defense I find very interesting, though.
How so?
Well, so they're transitioning, right? I know we were just talking about the 3-4-4-3 thing, but I do think it is relevant here. So the new defensive coordinator, Robert Saleh, is switching to the Seattle-style scheme, which is interesting because they've been drafting 3-4 players for 3 years. And they have some talented players. And so I've been kind of looking at and thinking through the talent they have and trying to work up the depth chart in my mind, how I think it's going to end up. And there's a lot of questions, and it's kind of interesting. They have fun pieces to play with, at least.
Yeah, in some ways. I mean, they already lost Malcolm Smith, who they spent a lot of money on. He was kind of the defensive version of Kyle Juszczyk, where it was like, who else wanted this guy for this much money?
definitely not the Seahawks.
Yeah, he's done for the year. So that's already a loss for them. And, I mean, they were going to bring in Reuben Foster anyway, so he was already going to take that role in the long term, I feel like. So. Yeah. It's kind of going to be a little quicker for them. And Ruben Foster's already struggling with an injury, though, no?
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, and then, of course, Navarro Bowman is coming back from another Achilles injury, I believe. I mean, there's injuries up and down this roster. He's a C joint sprain, so he's day-to-day as far as issues go. So it's not too, too bad. Jimmy Ward's still on the PUP list. And there's definitely talent here. I mean, there's a lot of... They use a bunch of high picks on defensive ends and... defensive players in general over the past 3 years. They're going to have 3 first-round picks up front in Eric Armstead. Oh, sorry, 2 or 3 first-round picks.
I don't think Mitchell was a first-round pick.
No, Mitchell's not a first-round pick. But who's
the
pick?
Yeah, so 3.
Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner and Solomon Thomas. They got a pick this year. So, yeah. So 3 first-round picks in there, you know, on their defensive line and in nickel packages would go a long way. I mean, there's talent there for sure. They just haven't done a good job of developing their young talent. And I don't think the thing where they're changing schemes on a regular basis is really helping matters.
No, I think the bigger question will just be whether Robert Saleh, this is his first coordinator job, is good at his job, right? I mean, it's less about the scheme and more about, you know, him developing that front seven, because that is where all of the investment is right now. Now, I imagine we'll get Solomon Thomas. If he's not starting, you know, he'll be starting by week three or four. Mm-hmm. As strong side defensive end, and then you get Buckner and Mitchell on the inside, Armstead at Leo, just thinking about how the Seahawks do it, you know, with the Sam dropping down. Buckner is a really interesting player to me because he was, you know, a 3-4 defensive end, and he looked a lot better as the season went on. I thought he showed some promise by the end of the year, and so moving inside like that, I think could be if he's able to generate a interior pass rush, and I think he has the, you know, physical attributes and has shown that he can do that. I think he could be a pretty impactful player for them.
Yeah, I think Armstead's so interesting because he was drafted to be a 3-4 defensive end. I mean, he was drafted to be a 290-pound, you know, one gap player at times. Now he's going to be he lost a bunch of weight, but like your typical Leo's like 240, maybe 250. Like way smaller.
Cliff Averill.
Yeah, so I mean,
he's giant. He is. Eric Armstead is like so shockingly huge in person. I mean, he is so tall. How tall is he? Gosh, he is a mammoth man.
I like that this is we have you on the show as you go on camp tours.
6'8". He's 6'8".
So we just find out how tall people are in the show.
it is going. I'm not sure about how he fits into that role.
Did Michael Bennett say that he was a potential defensive MVP?
He said that about Buckner.
About Buckner?
Eventual defensive player of the year candidate, DeForest Buckner. Yeah, he's my breakout guy on this team. Not
that,
for that
is
reason.
Is that why? I was going to say.
No, it's just because, okay, so, I mean, we can talk about, you know, this defense was so bad against the run last season. I don't want to say historically bad, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they were horrible. And, you know, I remember last season I hosted a fantasy show, and basically the rule of thump was just start the running back against the Niners, and you're going to get, you know, the number one. Because they were just so, so awful. And then when you switch to a 4-3, that, you know, that does change who is more impactful against the run. And I just think Buckner is going to have to amp up that part of his game, you know, just be a more, I think, all well-rounded player for them to be successful against the run.
Yeah, for sure. I feel so weird about players who are here from the glory days still. Like, your Ahmad Brooks, for example, who's been on, like, the verge of getting cut for 5 years now. And Joe Staley, like, I can't imagine what it's like to be there where you're, like, you're going to the building and you were so good at one point and now you're just so bad and you've been bad almost as long as you were good. Like it must be so weird to be there at this point.
Elvis Dumervil's on this team. That's so strange. He gets my like, wow, that guy's on this team award of this division.
Very fair. Yeah. It does seem strange that he's there, but you know, maybe he'll have a good year. I mean, stranger things have happened. What do you think about this team? I mean, What do you think the record will be, and what do you think the record would need to be to show, like, to make you optimistic about 2018?
I have them at 4-12.
me too.
Is that what you have?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, no joke.
That's hilarious. I think here's the thing. I don't think anything matters on offense with this team. I don't, like, because I was, you know, like what I was saying earlier with just game planning for the future, I don't think they care.
Would you re-sign Carlos Hyde if he has a good year?
Maybe. But, you know, with running back. I don't think they've drafted anyone.
They drafted Joe Williams, who retired at a point in college. But someone who, like, apparently the rumors were, like, they, Shanahan, like, went to bat for Joe Williams in the draft room and basically, like, bullied John Lynch into picking him. So we'll see. I don't know.
That's really funny. So I don't think they need to see improvement on offense. I think the secondary is horrendous.
Yeah, it's bad.
I challenge 99% of football fans to name a Niners cornerback.
Yeah, it's not.
I'm confident they would not be able to. But that said, I think what you want to see out of this team is a front seven that moves into the top half of the NFL because they've invested so much talent there. They need to look better. They need to stop the run. They cannot look like they did last season. I think if the front seven takes a step forward, that would show some improvement for this team that's meaningful going into the future.
All right, let's get to it. Just go. Seattle Seahawks, 2017. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good.
Are you?
Partially because of this conversation we've been having, which is this division is horrible.
Yeah, but I mean, like, do you feel like they're better positioned for the playoffs than they have been in years past?
Years past. Well, it's compared to the previous season, they're really similar, okay,
yeah,
to how they were last year.
That didn't go
so, well. No, but it went well. It didn't go well because Russell Wilson got hurt. I think we can all agree. And that was huge. And we know that the failure of the run game stemmed from that in large part, as well as obviously the offensive line. But I don't think there was a dramatic change from 15 to 16 there.
Yeah.
And then obviously Earl Thomas getting hurt, you know, completely tanked the season. So, yeah. And I watched the first preseason game on a plane, and when Earl Thomas delivered his first, I don't know if you saw it, but Shaquille Griffin, who's the new cornerback opposite Richard Sherman, got kind of beat, but it was underthrown, and Earl Thomas just comes out of nowhere, as he so often does, from across the screen, and just slams into both of them, and I almost screamed on the plane, because I was so nervous, and then he popped back up, so...
I'm shocked you almost screamed as opposed to actually screamed. Again, watching a preseason game on a flight, by the way.
Listen, it was terrifying, but it was in some ways comforting because he appears to be playing the same way he always has, at the same speed he always has. Mm-hmm. So that is clearly a huge factor in whether or not this defense is going to be, you know, as strong as they've been in the past. And I don't see any question marks on the defense. You know, obviously losing Malik McDowell, the first round pick, the defensive tackle, it stinks. But area where they have some depth.
He was their first pick.
What were you gonna say?
He was their first.
He
pick,
was,
right?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm pardon me. Second round pick, but he was their first pick. Yeah.
I forgot they traded down 17 times during the draft.
Even if I didn't know what would happen, that would just be what I would have guessed. So. Yeah. It's always crazy to me when CX fans get upset when they do that. I'm like, are you new here? Like,
The
third round pick, Nazir Jones, also a tackle, looked really strong. Again, it's just preseason, but just in terms of, because we're not talking. It's not like we were talking about Hassan Reddick and Buda Baker. These guys don't need to start and be impactful. Right. There just needs to be depth on the line. So I think there's a lot of players who could contribute. Depth there. The cornerback position opposite Richard Sherman is the big question mark. They, much to my disappointment, signed Tremaine Brock. I don't know. I really don't know if he's going to start there. I think that's all going to shake out over the next few weeks. So that's kind of the big question mark on defense.
How have you not bought a Shaquille Griffin jersey already, though? That's my question.
He's got a great story. Do you know his backstory?
Fill me in.
So he... has a twin brother who has one hand.
Really?
Who also plays cornerback, I believe. Let me see. At UCF. And was the ACC Defensive Player of the Year. He's really good. So, with one hand. So, I really hope I'm not getting all these facts wrong.
That would be a really hard thing to like mess up where you mishear it somehow.
He has one hand the whole time. They're just saying that he
makes one-handed catches.
But the Shaquille always insisted on having him play on all of his teams with him. He brought him. They went to college together. So this is the first time he's played without his twin brother.
Yeah.
And it was just a neat story about that family. But
that's cool.
So he's gotten a lot of the good shine in Cam. He looks so great. He didn't look. He made a couple of errors during the first preseason game. But he is right now the leader in the clubhouse, I think, to be the breakout, you know, defensive player.
And they're deeper at safety too. Like, there's no obviously no Earl Thomas replacement. That's just not feasible. There's no one else on the planet Earth who's going to be Earl Thomas at safety. But they brought in Bradley McDougal from Tampa Bay, who was pretty underrated there. They spent third and fourth round picks on Delano Hill and Tedrick Thompson. So, I mean, like, you're not going to end up playing guys off the street at safety, which might have been the case at some point over the past couple of years.
Tedrick Thompson got absolutely burned in the first preseason game on that drive. Or it was not the first drive. Earl was out. That's all I know. And it was a very nice, traumatic flashback to the end of last season, watching him get burned.
I have no idea who they even played in this preseason game, by the way.
It was San Diego.
Oh, wow.
So on offense, there are a lot of questions. Still, it's unclear how the running back core is going to shake out, and I think that's going to be really interesting to
see. Can I give you my prediction?
Please.
Let me ask you, what do you think my prediction is going to be? And then I'm going to tell you my actual prediction.
Record or what the running back
core? No, for the running back situation.
Oh, okay. I think you're going to predict that Eddie Lacy ends up being
no. I'm going to predict that CJ ProSize is the primary back by the end of the year, and it's like
the primary
a,
back.
It's like a very valuable primary back by the end of the year.
Well, I've been recommending him. He's been my fantasy pick.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I hate the injury prone label in general. Like, I think people throw it around with zero evidence or knowledge about how the human body works all the time. Mm-hmm. So I see the concern there, obviously. You know, he has had injuries in the past, and then what happened last season did happen. But man, did he look amazing before that.
Yeah.
And given this offensive line, just having that sort of optionality is so incredible and so helpful to this offense if he's able to, you know, start and make an impact.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a, like, a fifth-string running back who you're in love with, a la Terrain Pope in years past, on this roster?
Yeah, it's Chris Carson. He's the guy that everybody's really excited about.
Seventh-round pick.
He's looked really good. He looked great in the first game. We probably shouldn't talk about him for too long before I curse him, like I have so many Seahawks running backs of yore. But yeah, so, that's not a bad pick, though. I mean, a prediction, I think, about ProSize.
I just, running backs tend to make that second year leap more often than maybe we give the credit for. Like, there are a bunch of guys who get lost in the shuffle their first year, and then by the end of year two, it's like, even, it wasn't quite the case with David Johnson. Like, he was more productive as a rookie than ProSize was, but it's kind of a similar thing where it's like, okay, well, we know he's playing a bigger role, but how much bigger will it actually be? And then by the end of the year, it's he's, you know, the best running back in football. Like, I don't think ProSize is going to be that, but it wouldn't shock me if he was a, you know, if he was like the 10th best running back in football by the end of the year.
There's a lot of also questions in the wide receiver core. Your beloved Jermaine Kearse could be on the block. It's unlikely, but it's getting real crowded there. A lot of it depends. So Paul Richardson, who
is injured now,
finally he's back. So he comes back. So this is, you know, for people who haven't been following the team closely, is a high pedigree player who has been injured a lot and always comes back for one game and looks incredible, and then gets injured. And so comes back for the first preseason game. Makes an amazing, lays out, beautiful catch. I think it may have been a slightly unnecessary element of laying out there. And then immediately gets hurt, right? And then, but we're hearing he's actually back at practice, so I guess he's fine.
Yeah, he's
fine,
in his shoulder.
Yeah, so that's not too serious. But I was DMing Danny Kelly, our mutual friend, and I was trying to think, like, Paul Richardson, he's like one of those animals that only lives for one day, and it's the most beautiful day you've ever seen. Maybe like a cicada or something. But he's so awesome. But then the hurt thing. And I just was saying, I don't like calling people injury prone, but I feel very confident in saying he is injury prone. We know that about him. So that's a question mark in the wide receiver group, because if he does start, you know, it really has a chance to be the number 2 to Baldwin.
Yeah, I mean, by, you know, maybe week 5, week 6 last year, you kind of had an idea in your head of, okay, well, next year the wide receivers are going to be Doug Baldwin and Tyler Lockett, and they'll probably cut Kearse. Richardson might be a guy on the back of the roster, but now it's unclear because Lockett had that catastrophic injury last year. Who knows what he's going to be like this year coming back from it. Richardson has that sprained AC joint, has a history of injury, so it's tough to project a ton out of him. They could need more out of Jermaine Kearse than I think you're giving them credit for.
No. I meant Richardson at 3. Sorry, I forgot about Lockett.
I don't know. It's totally plausible that he could play ahead of Lockett. Like, it's not crazy by any means.
Yeah, I mean, this early signs on Lockett are optimistic. I kind of hope he doesn't return kicks, by the way.
Then who returns kicks for the Seahawks, then?
They have a McKissick was returning. They've got a couple special teamers.
You're not excited to see Earl Grant or Earl Thomas returning kicks and punts again?
I've blocked that out of my memory, and every time you bring it up again, I shiver. My whole body, like, gets chills. I think there was also the Richard Sherman fair catch.
He returned one
never
last
forget.
Year.
There's just some interesting. I think this offense could. I really do think they could be. They have a lot of talented players. The question mark, obviously, is the offensive line.
Yeah. As it is every year, and it does. It's shaping up in weird ways. Can you update us on the current configuration of the Seahawks offensive line?
Were you surprised by the Britt contract, the Justin Britt extension?
I was until I saw that it was only $5 million fully guaranteed.
And then which is great. I mean, it's a great contract for the team. But yeah, so Justin Britt, the center who's played a number of positions and has really been the only good player consistently for a couple years now. So as Seahawks fans assumed, they were not going to sign him, of course, because they haven't. I think the last time they extended a player, an offensive lineman, was Unger. He got signed to a 3-year contract. It's very team friendly. I was thrilled, to be honest. So the offensive line obviously starts with him.
It does seem weird. Like, I tweeted about it. It was like, the Seahawks, you know, sign undrafted free agents. They play them as starting, they move them around and play them as starters for 4 years, and then they get rid of them when they cost money. Justin Britt was drafted highly, has moved to center, played well, and now he gets signed to an extension. So the next logical step in the bizarro world is that he becomes a basketball player instead of converting from basketball to football.
Just let me have this. Just let me have this one thing that it was, I was so mystified. I made a joke about it, but like, I'm so used to, it's just, it was such a bizarre piece of news to come across my transfer.
Do you think they had to lock up Tom Cable when they told him?
You know what? When you say that, that's why it made me feel like there was some outside influence. Like maybe Paul Allen was like, guys, all of my rich friends. I just feels like someone intervened here and was like, come on. It's a great contract too. Okay, Justin Britt, we've gotten the center. So they've said the left side of the line is solidified with George Fant, people who have not played football, at left tackle, and then Jokel at left guard. He looked very good during the first preseason game, but it was only obviously small sample size, one drive, yada yada. But I was impressed. So and then the right side is still completely up in the air.
It's just like you paid Luke Jokel $8 million for that 1 year to be a left tackle. And because you were so disappointed with George Fant last year during the offseason. Everyone, you know, it was basically we have to give Fant some time to develop. We can't play him at left tackle. He's not ready for it yet. We found that out last year. And now it's like you're a month into camp. Not saying you, I'm saying Pete Carroll and that crew. Like,
no, I feel personally attacked.
I mean, you are a part of the team. So if anyone should feel personally attacked when I say negative things about the Seahawks, it's you. But like now it's like he's been in camp for 2 weeks and it's like, nope, he's actually great. We're going to play him a left tackle. And Luke Jokel, who we paid $8 million for this 1 year or two, is now like one of the five most expensive guards in all of football.
Yeah, I mean, from a team-building perspective, it's incomprehensible. From what we've seen so far, the left side looks okay. The right side has some serious issues. Jermaine Ifedi, in particular, who was drafted maybe to play right tackle, then played right guard last season, and now is maybe right tackle, and they're trying to figure that out, I guess. He has not looked fantastic, and so that's going to be a plot line, I guess, that shakes out over the next few weeks. What does the right side of the line look like? I will say, just again, based on one preseason game, they looked better than last season, early season. Again, that doesn't mean anything. I'm just reporting what I saw.
Just the facts.
It's hard not to look better. Also, let's throw that out there.
Yeah, that's also true. I mean, do you remember watching the first preseason game last year and feeling this way about them?
I think I don't remember feeling good about anything. I was thinking less the preseason, more at the beginning of the season, just being like, oh my God, watching that line. So a lot of these, you bet on some of these players to improve surely by the fact that they're just playing more, right? Mm-hmm. So Fant, Ifedi, they're playing
more.
Listen, they can't get much worse. That's how I feel.
It's very true. And if Russell Wilson doesn't, you know, suffer a serious ankle sprain in week one, he's going to be able to run out of more of the mistakes for sure, too.
God, he scrambled on a third down during the preseason game, and then I almost screamed again. It was so upsetting. He stepped up, too, into the... I'm trying to remember who missed. I mean, I think it was a group failure.
But just everyone missed. It was basically a screen pass.
Justin Britt. Justin Britt's really good, actually. It's kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a breakout player for the team?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Fant. I think that he's going to be, whether or not this offense is able to kind of return to some of their highs of 2015 season is going to depend in large part on his play.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I picked, obviously, Procise, who I'm super high on. But it comes down to the offensive line again. I mean, we saw it happen 2015, second half of 2015, the offensive line was okay, and Russell Wilson was maybe the best quarterback in football during the second half of that season. Yeah. So if anyone, how dangerous is this to say? If when I was doing this thing for NFL Live this year, I was talking about like who would be the next blank, like who is this year's David Johnson or who is this year's Matt Ryan. And the guy who makes the most sense is Russell Wilson. It's sort of like a guy who is established and a veteran who we kind of think we know what he can do. But if something else clicks for him, then suddenly he could take a big leap forward. And if the offensive line's good, which I don't think it's going to be, but if it was good, I mean, it's not crazy to imagine Russell Wilson having a super impressive season.
Yeah. If they're average, I think this team goes to the Super Bowl. If the offensive line is average, I really do. I think, and as far as the Wilson thing, I think he has really, I really like this wide receiver group.
Right? There was a guy.
I think it's the best it's been in a while.
There's a guy, a Facebook commenter, which I was reading, which I don't normally do, so please don't leave angry Facebook comments in my columns. But there was a guy who was like complaining about the Rams. I said something nasty about the Rams, and he was like, you know, like, oh, that's during the Watkins trade. He's like, this is terrible analysis. Like, how can you say that the Rams aren't going to be good? Like, even before the Watkins trade, their baseline was going to be an 8-8 team.
That's baseline.
Like, are you sure? Like, really? I mean, like, you don't say they have to shot at being 8-8. Sure, it's totally plausible. It could happen if everything goes right. But, like, their baseline? So that's how I kind of feel when you're like, well, if the offensive line is average, they're going to make it to the Super Bowl.
I think if this team is so balanced, mm-hmm. right, I really – and I think the conference is pretty much up for grabs.
Yeah.
I just think if this is a 15th best offensive line in football, then I'm not worried about this offense at all.
I think offense is going to be
good. But that's very – that's low probability. Average? Like average? That's – right now, the you know, last season they were like 30, right?
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, something like that. So – that's an enormous leap. So when I say that, think about how improbable that is.
It's kind of crazy to think they could be like the 25th best offensive line in football and still be the best offensive line in the division.
That's insane. Yeah.
That's not out of the question.
There's a lot of bad offensive lines in this division. You're
this
right.
is a weird division. It's not the prettiest football at times, but it's going to be fun. I'm going to say, don't know about the playoffs. That's a long time from now, but I'm going to say they finish 11-5 and obviously end up winning the NFC West.
What do you think I got?
14-2.
11-5.
11-5.
We had all the same record predictions. Wow.
Now we can't do a show
That's
again.
Funny.
It's like a jinx.
I went through their schedule. It's just this division, man. It's so bad.
Who are their five losses to?
Oh, I didn't write it down.
I'll run through the teams. Give me the five losses.
All right, I got it.
At Green Bay.
That's a loss. I have that one down.
Okay, week one loss. So you're going to be distraught week one. We already know. Mm-hmm. Hosting San Francisco at Tennessee. At Tennessee could be tough. That could be a hard matchup for them.
I thought that was a possible loss, but I didn't. I ended up giving them that one.
Sure. Hosting the Colts at the Rams before the bye.
That's a loss. I'm going to that game, so I assume they're going to lose.
Bye week at the Giants. Hosting the Texans, hosting Washington at the Cardinals, hosting Atlanta.
I put the Falcons as a loss.
Falcons as a loss. Interesting. So that's three. At the Niners.
Oh, actually, you know what? I think we missed. Which else did I put in a loss? Oh, I have them beating the Eagles and losing to the Giants, which either one of those is going to be a loss, I think, because I think both those teams are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But choose one.
At the Niners, hosting the Eagles, at the Jags. Is that what you have as the final loss for them?
Yes. At the Jags. Sorry, we skipped at the Cardinals. I marked that. I have them losing to the Cardinals once.
Wow, so you think they're going to be in kind of rough straits in the middle of the season and then go on a hot streak to end the year?
I do.
Are you hoping...
the offensive line is going to get better.
Are you hoping to get a Levitard show assignment to go to the Jaguars game in Jacksonville on December 10th.
I would love to go to a Jacksonville game.
Would you, if you had
the
opportunity?
The stadium with the pool, right?
Yeah, if you had the opportunity to go in the pool.
Absolutely not.
Would you go in jeans like that woman from the first year they had the pool?
Who is playing quarterback in Jacksonville when the Seahawks play them in Week 14?
It could be Trevon Boykin.
He looked great. In the preseason game.
I'm
look
sure
awesome.
He did. I'm sure he did.
I gotta bring up my Here Comes Dad Boykin memes. That's
I'll say the Jaguars quarterback at that point is going to be Brandon Allen, their 2016 second round pick.
Ooh, that's a fun one.
And I think it will go very poorly for him against the Seahawks. I think that'll be a very comfortable win for Seattle.
That's not an L on my list.
We'll come back. If they lose, we will come back on the show in week 14, and you can apologize to the Jags fans for doubting the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I will. Okay, I will. I'll do that.
That's a promise. Mina, let's plug your 18 television shows and radio shows and podcasts.
Well, are we allowed to talk about, I guess, our other thing, our side project?
No, we can't talk about it yet.
Okay, never mind. Sorry. All right, never mind.
More coming on that in the weeks to come, I suppose.
There's a side project. So I'm on Around the Horn a couple times next week. Catch me there.
We're releasing this next week, I should say. So.
Oh, we are? Okay. Yeah. So I will have been maybe on Around the Horn. We're doing a radio show, The Morning Roast, is on
this
Sundays.
This is on Tuesday.
Sorry?
We're releasing this on Tuesday the 22nd.
Okay, I'm on Around the Horn that day, I think. So you can get a lot of me. Listen to the podcast, watch the show. yeah, I have some stories in the NFL previews coming out that I'm pretty excited about. And
you're not going to tease one of those stories?
I guess I can. He's already talked about it. I have
that's
a story on Aaron Rodgers.
That's what I was
coming out.
Like,
he's already exposed in our NFL preview. So that hits newsstands, I think, at the end of the month.
Pretty much just turn on anything related to ESPN. Open up anything related to ESPN. You're going to find a Mina Kimes story or a Mina Kimes opinion on it one place or another.
I can't believe we had all the same records. That's wild.
That's not that crazy. I feel like we talk enough about the NFC.
Have you done
West
that with anyone else?
No, usually I had one of them where we had the same breakout player for, I think, three of the four. Sando, I think we had three of the four breakout players for the same one.
Okay.
I feel like I'm getting people who are too smart on the show, like people I agree with too much. I need to get people who like just have totally awful opinions and I can just be like, no, that makes no sense.
Yeah, well, hey, you heard it here first. The Niners fullback, Kyle Juszczyk. He's gonna break out. That's our only point of disagreement.
It's very similar to your Aubon Pond character. From Days of Old.
All right, man. Let's do this again when the season starts.
We will. You'll be back on at some point during the year. But, Amina, of course, as the most frequent contributor to the Bill Barnwell Show, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for listening to the Bill Barnwell Show today. More preview podcasts coming later this week. An old friend will be making an appearance on the show later this week. So another old friend in addition to Mina Kimes and some new people coming on next week as well. So thanks so much for listening, and more preview podcasts on the way.